Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Ria. I am your host, and today I'm really pleased and grateful to welcome Alexander Shaw. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, well, for those of you that don't know who Alexander Shaw is, and if you don't know, then you've probably been living under a rock somewhere and nowhere near the sea and social media. But back on, I think it was in and around September 8th or 9th, that you took off on a great sailing adventure and then disappeared from planet Earth, according to your siblings anyways, and those friends and family that cared about you. Before we get into the storm, where were you and where was your journey started?
Well, I started my journey in the North Sea from Lowestoft, north of London, and I've got as far as Reggio Calabria in the south of Italy, and I took off on this particular leg from Reggio Calabria, right in the toe of Italy, between Italy and Sicily, and I was heading toward Greece. I was trying to get to Corinth.
Now, what type of boat were you sailing?
My boat is a Westerly GK29 racing sloop. It was made in 1982. It was the very last of the Westerly GK29s are made, and it's very, very solidly built and extremely fast for a boat of its time, for a displacement.
So not necessarily a boat that is prepared for stormy seas, as it were.
Well, it's built like a brick. I'm not sure if it was really designed for stormy seas, but I now know that it can withstand almost anything. I'd rather I hadn't had to test that, but it really is a very, very strong boat indeed. And I think, you know, that the early GRP displacement hulls were slightly over-engineered. I think nowadays a modern boat actually of the same size would probably be weaker because they're built like squeezy bottles, like bottles of liquid soap. They seem to compromise on the thickness of the hull in order to build a lighter vessel, and as a result things break more easily.
Well, where were you headed? Like, you told us where you were headed, but, you know, how long did you expect that journey to take, and what sort of supplies did you have on board?
I reasonably expected it would take 3 days, maybe 4 days, to get across the Ionian Sea. And I planned for, well, you know, I planned conservatively. I suppose I probably had about a week's supply of food, and maybe 10 days supply of water. Well, as it turned out, exactly 10 days supply of water if I rationed myself carefully. And I had more in a tank, of course. I could have drank from the tap. And I don't have refrigeration on board. I sail, it's a pretty primitive setup. So, you know, it's canned food. I you can make couscous without hot water. I didn't have a gas canister at that time. I didn't feel I needed one, it was so hot. And you can stick canned tuna and things into that. I mean, it tastes like crap, but you can live off it.
When you first left, what was the weather like? Was it supposed to be smooth sailing? You know, the forecast was looking great, seas were looking good.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I mean, the thing is, at the south coast of Italy, you have quite irregular, where you get thunderstorms, and you know, it'll blow up, and then you'll be becalmed. So what I tried to do, this was the start of the problem, really. I headed much further south than really I should have done, because I reasoned that you'd get a more steady wind further south, and what I was trying to do is avoid being becalmed. And, you know, I ran out of wind almost immediately. I noticed the weather forecast was inaccurate. I sailed out of the Strait of Messina with the wind behind me on a beam reach. It should have been a broad reach. So almost immediately the wind was blowing in a direction it shouldn't have been. But I thought, well, you know, it's probably a microclimate to do with the land effect or something. So I just pushed it further out. Then there's a thunderstorm, and I thought, well, that's the. So I carried on out toward the north of Africa, thinking that if I got down far enough, then I would have a steady wind, and I was often becalmed. For the first 3 days, I was often becalmed. And then, you know, all of a sudden, I was 3 days into the voyage, and I really hadn't moved that far at all. So I hoped that in another few days, my luck would would turn for the better and I'd be able to get to Greece.
And what type of communications did you have on board?
Well, you know, the basics. I've got a VHF radio. I was able to speak to other boats, and I did. Otherwise, I've got flares. You know, if everything goes wrong, you've got the DSC button. You can hit it, an emergency button to tell people where you are. But you don't hit it unless you're in trouble, obviously. So I was just going on the VHF.
And when did you realize that there was trouble ahead?
When I was about halfway to Benghazi, I suppose. I mean, I've been pushed down quite a long way, and I was kind of trying to tack toward Greece at this point. I couldn't bear the thought of having to go back to Italy. You know, having spent so long out, it becomes a point of pride. You think, I must get across now. So I was tacking back and up and down, and I suppose I must have been sort of equidistant from the toe of Italy, Corinth, and blimey, I mean, almost the African coast. I mean, I was way down there in the Ionian Sea. And I was speaking to a... By that stage, of course, I had no accurate idea of what the weather was going to do. So I was speaking to ships to try to get the weather forecast. And the first ship I spoke to was a freighter from Shanghai. And he said, it's all good. It's a good northeasterly wind, which, of course, is exactly what I didn't want to hear, because northeasterly meant off the Greek coast. You forget about these things in a motorboat, I suppose, but you do actually need the wind kind of going in the right direction. I guess it might have been around... I don't know, what was it? Maybe the 12th or something. It was just when the storm was beginning to blow up. I mean, it took quite a long time for the forecasters to realize what was about to happen. So by the time I got warning of the storm, it came from a Russian ship, and they said, yeah, there's a tropical depression forming over the Ionian Sea. And by that stage, I was far from land to do anything about it. So... And I didn't have enough fuel to go one way or the other. I mean, you don't carry that much fuel on board a boat my size. So I just thought, well, it might blow up, and I'll just have to reef the sails into nothing and hove to.
What? Explain, you know, when the storm first hit you. What sort of feelings you were having, and you know, were you thinking, or were you just acting on reflex?
I sort of knew what the weather usually did around that part of the Mediterranean. So I've been looking at the weather forecast for weeks, and I kind of knew that it wouldn't get too bad, so to speak. In fact, it was the anomaly of the year. I mean, Storm Janus was absolutely huge. And so I had no idea that it could get as bad as it did. What happened is the wind just blew up and up and up, and I accordingly reefed my sails in and in and in, until I was sailing. I was doing about 4 knots on a head sail the size of a pocket handkerchief. And I just thought, blimey, I hope the rig holds. I hope the mast doesn't blow over. And I suppose I was in that situation for 2 days as the storm, as what is now being called a medicane, a sort of a miniature hurricane, blew right over me. And all you can do is fly on Earth and hope that the mast doesn't blow over. But, you know, I knew that if the mast did blow over, I had a life raft, I had flares. I just had to sit it out in a life raft. And then, you know, I'd probably be back on land faster than I would be if I had to sail back, because a motorboat would come by in the next few days. So I didn't feel in mortal danger. But I did know that people would be worrying about me, and that was the worst thing. I couldn't, there's no button to transmit with urgency that you're okay. I mean, there's a button to say I'm in terrible trouble, but my finger never came near to it, because I wasn't in terrible trouble. You just sit it out. That's the trouble.
So, were you sleeping? Obviously, you didn't have any sleep while you were out there for those few days.
Nah, I didn't sleep, not really, no. You get dark, you watch it get light again outside. I spent rather a long time just sort of lying there, fantasizing about staying in 5-star hotels. that was, you know, you just sort of think, these sorts of places where they have an executive suite with a television on the wall, which has extraneous weather forecasts, you know, Doha, sunny, San Francisco, overcast, Calcutta, raining, and, you know, a little sort of buffet with lots of urbane snacks and caviar and guava juice. And, you know, you just sort of think about that sort of thing. You think, what the hell am I doing in this boat? Why don't I sort of go and get a proper job? You know. Yeah.
I can imagine that would really be killing you when you're in the middle of the sea and you don't know which direction you're going. Did there come a point in time where you were hit by lightning?
I was hit by lightning with a massive bang and flash. Oh, this is the other thing. I could probably have spoken to more vessels than I did while I was out there. I might even have heard the Coast Guard saying, hey, has anyone seen Alexander Shaw? Are you okay? But I didn't because I switched off the radio. I switched off the radio to save it if I was hit by lightning. So I went into radio silence because I knew that the radio, of course, had the DSC button. So if I really was in trouble, then I would also lose my ability to hit the emergency buttons. So it's all incorporated with the radio. So I just switched off everything, which meant that, of course, it just worried people even more because I couldn't be located anywhere. You see, this
were looking for you for about a week, right?
Sorry?
People were looking for you for about a week, correct?
About a week. No, I have a large family, so people don't notice when people are missing for a rather long time. It was only really when the hurricane really kicked off that one of my brothers pointed out that nobody had seen me, I think, for 9 days. And then, you know, how the media, they blow these things out. The BBC ran a news report which showed, the Ionian coast of Greece getting an absolute hammering. And of course, my mother watched it. And everyone saw it. And then they all said, okay, right, we're going to scramble fighter jets and God knows what and try to find him. I sort of imagined that this might be the reaction at home. I can't do damn all about it, can you? You just have to sit there and hope that it doesn't get too out of hand. People like my father, I think he was more sort of stoic about it. And he said, oh, you'll be okay. But, you know, he said it wouldn't look good at the inquest if he tried to put too many brakes on the manhunt if I had been lost. It's always a very good question, isn't it? At what point should people react? And I think actually everybody was remarkably calm. I probably would have, if I'd been on land, I probably would have reacted even a little earlier than a lot of other people, because in that situation it is rather worrying. But as I say, I couldn't do anything about it.
Well, I think it sounds like your family is the kind of family that probably prepared you to be lost at sea for a week.
Yeah, they sent us to boarding school.
I guess it's quite similar, isn't it? Lost at sea in the middle of a typhoon. Yeah, yeah. It's about equal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't really prepare somebody for. I mean, you theoretically what you have to do in that situation. You just get on with it. You know, I've never been in that situation before. But you sort of academically know what you have to do, and you do it, and you just hope for the best. And the rest, I have to say, is completely down to the brilliant 1970s, 1980s engineers who built the Westerly boats. I can't recommend those boats enough. You can't get them now. They're all in the secondhand market. So, you know, they're not sponsoring me. But they are really, really well-made boats. I can vouch for that.
So you managed to find your way back to land. Did you sail back or were you rescued?
Oh, yeah, I sailed back. No, I wasn't rescued. Absolutely no. I got back by myself. When I was blown all the way, I nearly got in to sort of let back toward the toe of Italy to where I am now, near to Siderno. When I got in, I radioed the port as I was entering. I gave my name and the name of the boat. And then suddenly I heard lots of Italian voices clamor in on the same channel saying, Ecco e lui, you know, we found him. It's you, isn't it? I said, oh, shit, I'm so sorry. And then, then you suddenly know then how serious it got, when you see all the sort of Coast Guard uniforms, all the sort of white uniforms lined up along the pier, and you think, my God, I'm going to get in trouble now, aren't I? And they're surprisingly gracious about it. I think, these Coast Guard people, the real flourish they put on their job quite often is not to make people feel like complete idiots when they've caused so much trouble. But I really did have to promise everyone after that I would get AIS from click on the internet.
Sorry, we missed out on that little bit. You promised everybody that you would get AIS, sorry?
Yeah, well, I had to promise people at home that I would get something which would enable them to identify me at sea with AIS, so they could see where I was, because the trouble was they didn't even know where I was. I mean, my mother was talking about trying to scramble an air sortie from Bulgaria at one point, because the Greeks, they were quite relaxed about it, let's say. They said, well, we'll let you know if he shows up. So the manhunt sort of expanded. I think our embassy in Rome were quite helpful. But yeah, really, it would have been much less of a headache for other people if I had been on the AIS system.
I can imagine, especially with your family wondering where you were. And I mean, originally this journey was supposed to last 3 days. And of course, then it sort of expanded till 10. So, after 3 days in the middle of a sea and there's a freak storm that occurs, I can imagine your family would be a little bit concerned.
You were, yes. Very, very kind of them. It's rather touching, actually.
Yeah. Now you know they love you, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It brought you closer together.
Maybe I was just
I say it brought you closer together.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Maybe that's what we all need to do, just get lost at sea for a week and our families will love us more. I might try that.
Yeah.
But you've not landed. Now where you are is not actually far from where you left.
Yeah, I know. I went in a huge circle. It's very depressing.
What are your plans next?
Well, I'm going to go to Greece and Istanbul and take Constantinople back from the Saracen. And then I'll try to finish, somewhere north of Istanbul. I'm not quite sure where. And then I'll, be back in London for Christmas.
So has this given you any different insight into life, any different insight into sailing? Or is it just a matter of, I need to make sure that I can be identified on sea and I'll carry on as I always have?
The latter, really. I think I've always been quite invulnerable to persuasion in these sorts of situations. But for your listeners out there, if any of you is a computer programmer or can write an app for a smartphone, what we need is an app which I can download onto my smartphone and phone to my VHF radio and broadcast onto the AIS system my position, because I'm now going to get AIS for my boat and it's going to cost what, 400-600 euros, and that's far too much. I'm sure that for 30 euros it would be possible, if somebody could just write the program, to download an app to do exactly the same job for a smartphone. Anyone who writes that program will be doing the world a favor, because AIS is only 10 years old, but really everyone should have it. Or I say that now.
Well, you know what? We have to excuse the sound because you are in the middle of a street in Italy. So, of course, it's a bit noisy, but that's good. The story is absolutely amazing. And, I will include the link to some of the search articles that were going on around social media, because there was a lot of people, and I was reading the responses to the search, and a lot of people were praying for your safety and praying for your safe return. And
I'm very, very blessed. It was an extraordinary reaction. I read down as many of the comments as I could after the event, and I really expected that people would be saying, you know, what an idiot. You know, I deserved to really get quite a harsh response, I think, for what I did. I went a very long way from land, having said I'd only be a few days, and caused an awful lot of worry. And yeah, everyone was actually surprisingly rather kind about it. So yeah, it was rather touching.
Well, do you realize at the end of the day what really caused that was your ego? Was because you didn't want to have to come back to where you started?
Oh, well, no shit, Sherlock, absolutely. I mean, it was completely... I mean, you run the Satan Channel. You know the sorts of people get onto boats and leave land behind them. You know, it's a world of egomaniacs and you know, the best conspiracy theorists and political extremists at the other end as well. I mean, it's just you know, that's how it is, isn't it?
Do you know what?
Got people who are abandoning society by default, really, haven't you? So I mean, you know. So yeah, it was the ego.
Do you know what? It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. It's great because I have to say, and I say this in a lot of interviews, especially with sailors. Sailors are a breed unto their own. They are very individualistic people. They're very tough people. They're crazy people to a certain degree. And honestly, they're my kind of people. I really do enjoy speaking. There's a passion. You know, when you speak to somebody who is a sailor, whether they be solo sailing or whether they be sailing in a team, when they talk about what they do, there is a fire that comes out of their eye and a fire that comes out of their soul. And there's just something that drives them to continue to sail. And I think that's absolutely phenomenal. So, you know what? Yeah, ego drove you to do that. But at the end of the day, most of the things that sailors do, they wouldn't get done unless there was a bit of ego involved.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So your mom's going to be happy that you're home for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope so. You know, maybe she'll slap me about a bit, but yeah, I'll be happy to see them all.
Yeah, well, let's hope you get some Christmas presents instead of some coal.
Yeah, well, I'll bring them back some Turkish delight from the Bosphorus.
There you go. Well, Alexandra, I am really pleased that you made it back safely, because the world needs more sailors like you out there and pushing boundaries and having fun regardless of what goes on. We hope to hear more from you in the future, and please do drop in from time to time and let us know what your next sort of adventure is.
Thank you, I'll do that.
And we will make sure that we put the specifications of what you need underneath this interview, so that maybe a programmer out there can write that for you. And by the time you come back from your sailing, and maybe your mom can get you that $30 to $40 app for Christmas instead of coal.
Yes, well, somebody will make a fortune if they write that program.
Look, see, I'm working for you here, right? You know, your mom's going to watch this interview, because all moms watch the interviews of their sons. So she's going to watch this, and now she knows what you want for Christmas. So you're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Once again, you've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. Tune in again for another episode.